The culture war is lost for the opponents of sexual minorities, but they'll lose more quickly if people stand up and say, this is it, get used to it.
I can tell by the footsteps on your way in, joking in and you're looking for some play in.
To live a life exquisitely, to bask in joy.
Without you, man, I thought it would crumble.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. South Africa's parliament considers its high court's marriage proposal, Australia's gayest justice judges movement progress, and the personal is musical in this month's audiophile. All that and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Kareem Ferguson.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 26, 2006. Marriage equality legislation will be introduced in South Africa's parliament within the next several days following the government's approval of a draft proposal this week. Parliament will essentially have 3 months to act. The nation's highest judicial body, the Constitutional Court, set a December 1st deadline last December when it ordered changes to the Marriage Act to correct provisions that discriminate against same-gender couples. The court also warned that if Parliament fails to meet the deadline, the Marriage Act will automatically be interpreted to include the gender-neutral words or spouse. Cabinet noted that this bill was likely to generate a lot of public debate, spokesperson Themba Masiko said. But at the end of the day, the decision of the Constitutional Court must be respected by everyone. There has been strong religious opposition to the measure. The country's conservative African Christian Democratic Party called for a constitutional amendment to protect traditional marriage, as they say. But the government quickly rejected that proposal. Whether through parliamentary action or the original Constitutional Court ruling, South Africa seems poised this year to become the first on the continent to extend full marriage rights to gay and lesbian couples.
South African Constitutional Court Judge Cato Regan said this week that the issue needs to be dealt with, and it needs to be dealt with urgently. She noted that people who cannot generally afford legal costs continue to be forced to file individual cases to establish their rights. One such case heard this week in the Constitutional Court involved the inheritance rights of a surviving same-gender partner when the deceased partner leaves no will. The Pretoria High Court ruled earlier this year that a section of the Intestate Succession Act is unconstitutional because it doesn't allow same-gender life partners to automatically inherit on the death of their intestate partners, as a legal spouse would. There was no word on when a ruling would be announced.
Meanwhile, Nigeria's House of Representatives is planning a public hearing on what international critics have called the most oppressive anti-queer legislation on the planet, the Act to Make Provisions for the Prohibition of Relationship Between Persons of the Same Sex imposes a mandatory 5-year prison sentence for anyone attempting to create homosexual marriages. It also criminalizes persons who witness, aid, or abet the ceremony of same-sex marriage, including priests or other clerics who would face the same prison term. The measure also bans any amorous public displays by same-gender couples, including hand-holding, the formation of any queer advocacy organizations, and adoption of children by lesbian or gay couples or individuals. The draft bill would also deny recognition in Nigeria of legal same-gender relationships contracted in foreign jurisdictions. Nigeria's Federal Executive Council earlier this year approved the legislation and sent it to the National Assembly for final approval. In announcing public hearings in his legislative body, the chairman of the House Committee on Human Rights said that the process of making laws should not be left exclusively to members of the National Assembly. Amnesty International says the proposed law contradicts fundamental freedoms under Nigeria's 1999 constitution and international and regional human rights laws to which Nigeria is a signatory. The European Parliament's Intergroup on Gay and Lesbian Rights has also condemned the legislation. However, it enjoys the strong support of Nigeria's Anglican Church. Infamously anti-queer Archbishop Peter Akinola issued a statement urging its passage, claiming, "The idea expressed in the bill is the moral position of Nigerians regarding human sexuality."
Gay activists in Uganda have condemned a list of alleged homosexuals in the country published in the Red Pepper tabloid newspaper. Gay sexual activity in the East African country is illegal and punishable by up to life in prison. There are no anti-discrimination laws protecting gay and lesbian people in Uganda. Yoweri Museveni, the country's president, recently pushed through a constitutional ban on same-gender marriage. Sexual Minorities Uganda called for the nation's citizens to stand up for human rights, saying in a statement that our brothers, whose names were published in the Red Pepper tabloid, are currently undergoing discomforts and are living under unbelievable fear of being arrested, ostracized by their families, or sacked from their jobs. Earlier this year, two tabloid newspaper editors in Cameroon were jailed after they printed a list of allegedly gay public figures.
Nepal's sexual minority communities want a voice in the new Charter of Rights being developed in their country, where homosexuality is currently punishable by up to 2 years in jail. Blue Diamond Society, the nation's most visible queer advocacy organization, is urging changes to laws that discriminate against LGBT people. They're also demanding representation in the elections that the government has promised to hold by next year to allow Nepal's people to choose between a monarchy and a republican form of government. Blue Diamond is also calling for other changes. Transgenders must be recognized in the citizenship card and other government certificates, the group says, not just as male and female. They're further demanding legal marriage or civil unions for couples regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity, and that transgenders be given property rights. As if to underscore Blue Diamond's push for visibility, two gay men reportedly exchanged traditional garlands of marigold this week in what's believed to be the first public same-gender wedding in Nepal's capital, Kathmandu. Several guests, mostly queer activists, but also a few relatives, joined in the celebration, although there was no Hindu priest to conduct the ceremony. It remains to be seen if LGBT voices will be heard in Nepal's mostly feudal society, however, which condemns homosexuality. Gay men in particular have been routinely abused and raped, at times by the Himalayan country's own security forces.
But Stockholm's annual Pride Parade attracted a record 35,000 marchers, 71 floats, and 350,000 spectators on August 5th, according to police reports. It was led by men and women on motorcycles sporting rainbow flags and feather boas. However, in what police are calling a hate crime, three skinheads attacked a lesbian and two gay men near the park where the march concluded. One Pride celebrant was taken to a hospital. There were no reports about the condition of the victim or if there have been any arrests. In national politics, a parliamentary committee evaluating civil partnerships, legal in Sweden since 1995, called them outdated, according to a report by state broadcaster SVT this week. The committee said parliament should legalize same-gender marriage next year and allow gay and lesbian couples to marry in churches.
An estimated 50,000 people, about one-sixth of the country's population, took part in the Pride Parade and Festival on August 11th and 12th in Reykjavik, Iceland. Iceland Review Online called the two-day celebration one of the major festivals of the summer. Providing more reason for lesbi-gay couples to celebrate, Iceland's parliament has modified the country's laws on registered cohabitation so that, except in name, same-gender couples receive all the rights of marriage, including adoption and assisted pregnancy. One local activist boasted, "As far as family law is concerned, all discrimination against gays and lesbians has now been removed in Iceland."
And finally, arguably the most famous location in modern queer history might be disappearing, according to a story this week in the New York Observer. The Stonewall Inn at 53 Christopher Street in New York City's Greenwich Village, the site of the 1969 riots widely credited with birthing the modern-day queer civil rights movement, could be fading into oblivion. Whether that's a good or bad thing depends on whom you talk to. Neighbors in the now ultra-gentrified village say that the Stonewall's traditional gay patrons have been pushed out in favor of a new urban, hip-hop, gangster clientele, and that noise and crime have become a serious problem. But the current regulars, mostly men of color, say they feel more at home at the Stonewall than at other clubs. All the black clubs have been closing down, said one patron. It's so comfortable here. It's a hip-hop crowd, said another, and I can just be myself here. The Landmark hadn't even been a bar for nearly 20 years when it reopened in 1990, with promises by new owners to return the bar to its former glory. But David Carter, the author of Stonewall, The Riots That Sparked the Gay Revolution, told The Observer that they were mostly interested in exploiting the location's name. In Stonewall's heyday, he added ironically, you had underage hustlers, people selling drugs, and it was a really seedy place. Out of a fluke of fate, the Stonewall is probably closer now to what it was in 1969. Others charge the current owners with mismanagement and with abandoning the community by putting the Stonewall Inn up for sale. Dual Management, which owns the property, says it's keeping its options open as to what might become of the place. And if it becomes a bar where gay patrons aren't welcome at all, writes The Observer's John Coblin, the final nail will be driven through the casket. And don't expect a Save Stonewall campaign, says one of the current co-owners. We're famous all over the world, but no one in New York cares, he told The Observer. The younger community doesn't even know what it is. The older community doesn't go out or care. We could have done more, lamented a bartender known only as Tree, who says he worked at the Stonewall Inn during its riotous past and works there now. We failed its history, he said.
That's NewsWrap for the week ending August 26, 2006, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Kareem Ferguson.
How can you get out from under if you've got your hand on the stove waiting for the glaciers to melt? You'll hear the answer to that musical question later in the program. Always outspoken Australian High Court Justice Michael Kirby was stepping on toes again the past couple of weeks. Kirby, who was appointed to the court in 1996, told a group of Sydney law students on August 23rd that Australia's judicial system was lagging behind the rest of the world because of its failure to see domestic law in the context of international law. In a speech to queer activists just days before that, Kirby was critical of the homophobic religious right, but also chastised LGBT organizations for not cultivating stronger political ties and media presence. That all-important visibility was also on the judge's mind when he spoke at a Brisbane Pride forum called A Celebration of Achievements. Publicly gay since 1999, Justice Kirby was emphatic about the role of visibility in combating bigotry, but compassionate about the personal nature of each individual act of coming out.
We've reached quite an interesting time. From Galway in the west to Vladivostok in the east, there is no country that has criminal laws against gay people now. You don't get into the Council of Europe if you have such laws. And if you think that those laws began in the reign of Constantine, the emperor, back in, I think it was the 6th or 7th century, that's an awful long time, and it's an awfully big change. And of course it spread elsewhere in the world, including in our own country. And it basically came about partly through civil libertarians standing up, through the actions of straight politicians. But then the most important thing for this began to occur, and you can see it here tonight. People had had enough. Enough is enough. People had decided that it was necessary to stand and be counted and say, this is how it is, get used to it, we're not going to change, we're not going to just disappear so that your illusions are comfortable. We're going to be here because this is just us. And if it's a problem, it's your problem. And it's an unscientific and an irrational problem. If only every homosexual person in our country were to make that stand, it would be astonishing. Because we all know that everywhere, everywhere in Australia, homosexual people are. And in a sense, as I now realise, one takes part in one's own denigration by being secret about it so that others won't get upset about it. However, different people come different speeds in the journey, and it's not a matter of forcing people, unless they're hypocrites, on their own speed to reach their own point and take their own journey and accommodate their own family and their other situations. And the cruel things that people write and feel and think and say are partly the result of the fact that they just don't know. They just don't know. I'm so old that I remember white Australia. I remember growing up in white Australia. I remember that Australians hated Asians in my lifetime. Astonishing to say it. They had stereotypes about Asians. And why did that change in this country? It changed in part because of some very courageous politicians. They're the ones who changed it by their leadership. But mostly it changed because we began to meet Asian Australians. We began to know them as human beings. We began to know them as friends and brothers. We began to love them because they were like ourselves, and we knew that we shared humanity with them. And we were greatly blessed, not only by their presence, but by the fact that we ridded ourselves of that horrible hatred. And I think that is how the attitudes to homosexuals is going to change, in the same path. It won't change if the homosexuals are hidden from the straight community. It will only change when they know who gay people are, that they are everywhere, that they are doing worthwhile things, that they are good and bad, interesting and boring, that they are every variety in every level of society. They're in prisons and they're in the High Court, and they're doing their job. And they're citizens, and they pay their taxes, and they have their mortgages, and many of them, if they're lucky, have partners and their families and friends. And every time you are nasty and hate gay people, you are being nasty not just to them, but to their families, their brothers, their sisters, and all the others who know them and love them and respect them. I never go to any conference or any occasion now, but somehow I work in the fact of my sexuality. Not to intrude it inappropriately, but simply to introduce it and then to move on. Now, I am an office holder under the Constitution of Australia. In November, I will be the longest serving judge in this country. I'm greatly blessed by my partner of 37 years, Johan. He is not here tonight because he stayed in Sydney because he's an Ankali, and he looks after people in Sydney under that scheme, which is people living with HIV. But there it is. It's boring. It's ordinary. It's normal. We get on with life, and so do other people in this room. And the culture war is lost for the opponents of sexual minorities. It's lost because science is against them and rationality is against them. And it will change quite rapidly in Australia because I believe most of our fellow citizens are good people. And faced with reality, they change, as we have seen. And it'll change elsewhere. The enemies will remain for a while, but in the end, they will lose. But they'll lose more quickly if people stand up and say, this is it, get used to it, it's no big deal. deal.
That was Australian High Court Justice Michael Kirby speaking at this year's Brisbane Pride. He was recorded by This Way Out correspondent John Frame.
Hi, I'm B.D. Wong. I'm the actor from Law & Order Special Victims Unit and Oz, and the author of Following Fu, The Electronic Adventures of the Chestnut Man. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
Their current work could not be more personal, but the three solo artists featured in this month's audiophile are here because they succeed in touching something universal.
The second album by Colorado native Liz Clark is called Hand on the Stove. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile.
Don't you recognize the face of an old friend? I'm the girl sleeping over every weekend. How the hell am I in this situation? I'm not letting you go this time. I'm not letting you go. I can tell by the footsteps on your way in. Drunk again and you're looking for some playing. That's how you forgot to tell me about your girlfriend. I'm not letting you go this time. I'm not letting you go.
Liz Clark's approach is to bare her soul, but also involve the listener.
I would say that this album is something that is deeply personal. There's definitely a lot of hope and a lot of optimism in there, but I also wanted to get out of my head and hope that I was accessible to other people and other people's feelings, hoping that other people could identify with it.
Who's your angel?
Find out more about the album Hand on the Stove by Liz Clark at www.lizclarkmusic.com.
Brian Lane Green is a former soap opera star and Broadway actor, and his latest album is called Waiting for the Glaciers to Melt.
To live a life exquisitely, to bask in joy, to be the man predicted when I was just a little boy. To live a life exquisitely, a life sublime. Be born, remembered, like a poem within a rhyme. Juxtapose a downward spiral to an upward soar. I would rather choose a ladder to the sky. Ignore revolving doors. I would rather choose joy like confetti falling on my face.
This is Brian's second solo album, and for this one, he gets personal.
My project's called Waiting for the Glaciers to Melt. It's an autobiographical journey, mine, in fact, and I'd never really written before, and all of a sudden, surprise, one day, I started writing, and things came out kind of intact. And anyway, it means a lot to me, and I hope it resonates with everybody else.
My heart is frozen. Wind blows in, turns it to an icy black. Have you ever seen a snowman talk? When the warm wind blows in, they say it frees the frozen. My days are numbered, and
you can learn more about Brian Lane Green's album, Waiting for the Glaciers to Melt, at www.brianlanegreen.com.
The debut album by Josh Zuckerman was called A Totally New Sensation.
And he's back to rock some more with his new CD, Out From Under.
Well, I guess you don't know. Out From Under represents all that humans go through. It's a collection of thoughts and emotions put into 13 original songs. And these songs guard life and love and the pain we all go through, you know, being in a relationship as well as out of one. So if you've ever experienced love, or if you're looking for love, the CD is definitely for you.
You told me I was your man right down to the bitter end. How can you tell me all this without the feeling? I guess you're just like them all. You keep me climbing the wall, trying to figure you out. Oh, what a pity. Without you, man, I thought it was nothing. Without you, man, I thought I would die from a broken heart. And without you, man, I thought it would crumble.
Find out more about the album Out From Under at www.joshzuckerman.com. That's www.joshzuckerman.com.
That's it for this edition of Audio File. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiofile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiofile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Kareem Ferguson, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, John Frame, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. Click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special LGBT movie, music, and history CD thank you gifts. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2BAY Byron Bay, New South Wales, KEOS College Station, Texas, WRUV Burlington, Vermont, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.